Today's episode is brought to you by The Chocolate Mousse. The Chocolate Mousse is a specialty candy store based in Pittsburgh, but they also have an amazing online store. They offer a number of different delicious sweet confections, everything from artisan chocolates, specialty curated gift baskets, gummies, jelly beans, imported candies from all over the world, and anything you can imagine, they can ship to you if you want to treat yourself. They can ship to your loved ones if you want to send a fun gift. And they are available on Instagram. You can find them at The Chocolate Mousse, PGH, that's MOOSE. Or you can go to their website at chocolate-mousse-2.myshopify.com.
You are wheeling down the same road I thought you had left by now, given the damage they've caused.
Okay, so it is the full moon. Do not use this full moon for manifestation. The energy in the air is best suited for breaking negative attachments and banishing heavy energies from your life. It is not for manifesting anything. Let me repeat that. Not for manifesting. So, Capricorn rules the bones. Maybe take a nice bath, rest your bones. Capricorn also rules the teeth. Maybe take tonight and practice some good dental hygiene. This week on the podcast, I have a dear new friend of mine, Shannon Lee O'Neill Leola. She's amazing. I actually had a session with her, and she's an intuitive healer. She was able to, just from a picture, she's never met me, not a day in my life, but she was able to identify a number of my health issues, and her Reiki really was very calming. I woke up completely refreshed. So I highly, highly, highly recommend her work. I would describe her as a multidisciplinary healer, a psychic medium, and an Akashic Records reader. So I just want to apologize. There might be some background noise that's kind of loud on this episode. I had to record this while doing laundry, so I apologize. Mercury retrograde. But stick around. You're going to really enjoy my chat with Shannon. I appreciate her so much.
She goes, you're going to be faced with a difficult decision today. But the thing is we're all faced with difficult decisions every day. It's like saying you're going to eat today.
Yeah, maybe by leaving her predictions vague and generalized, there's less of a chance of someone finding out she's a phony.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Weird Mercury stuff. I don't know.
Mercury retrograde, of course. Have you been having a lot of Mercury retrograde type stuff happening this week?
Yes. I primarily use Skype for work, and Skype has been acting so bizarre, and it's been super gnarly. So I've just been like last minute switching everyone to Zoom calls because it's been a little bit more stable. But yeah, it's just been like techie stuff. Nothing else really so far.
Well, that's good. Usually I get hit by the pre-shadow more than I actually get hit by Mercury retrograde, but I think that's also because I'm Mercury rising.
You know, and it's funny, I also usually feel that pre and post, you know, those windows a little more, but for some reason, yeah, I don't know, this time around, it's hitting more in a technology kind of way. But you know, we'll see how else it unfolds, but so far managing somewhat.
Well, we managed to connect internationally, so I'm pretty impressed.
I am too. And because sometimes too down here the Wi-Fi can be really weird, so luckily there's been no issues today with the Wi-Fi.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk to you about the fact that you are an intuitive healer. I would love to talk to you about Reiki and all of the things, but I guess my big question would be, where did it all begin? Is it familial? Is it natural? Is it something that was built over time? But where did the healer story begin for Shannon?
Oh boy, you know, it's a little of everything that you just said, because the energy obviously builds over time, and the more focus and attention and the more you put things into practice, the more that you just build up those energy signatures over time. And so they just keep growing and growing. But as far as an origin story, kind of the beginnings of these things, I have always, since I was a kid, been really connected to spirit. I was actually a devout Catholic as a child. Like, I would walk myself to church. I was in Catholic school from first grade all the way till 12th grade. But as a child, I was obsessed with the whole process of the Mass, the sit down, stand up, the singing, the stained glass, the smell of frankincense, everything about it spoke to me in such a way. And my initial experiences growing up we're more directly in connection to spirit as opposed to picking up information on other people. And what I mean by that is I had always had this awareness of there being like a higher intelligence and that, you know, we could have this intimate experience with spirit. And in that, at that age, obviously it was through the lens of Catholicism, but I was deeply connected with angels. And I had this really wild experience as a kid when the summer after my mother had passed away, I basically was shipped to Arizona to stay with an uncle of mine on my father's side. And what was going on at home in New Jersey was my mother's side of the family was going through the house and selling everything and selling my childhood home without my knowledge. And so, yeah, so when I was in Arizona, it was such a culture shock. And the environment was so different and it was so hot. And, you know, I had never been exposed to the desert before. Everything about it was pretty intense. And I had never spent significant amount of time like that before with my father's side of the family. So everything about that experience was really weird and intense. And then when I was there, I actually got really, really sick. I must have had the flu because I remember having really intense fevers. I remember feeling nausea. I was throwing up. I was going in and out. Like I was almost like delirious from fever. And my uncle was telling me that I was getting up a lot and sleepwalking. And so I remember one night I was sleeping in my cousin's room, and on her wall was a specific, very famous Catholic angelic image of these children walking across a bridge and there being a guardian angel. And the prayer associated with that image is, angel of God, my guardian dear, to whom his love commits me here, ever this day or night, be at my side to rule and guide. And I said that in this delirious, feverish state, laying there, sweating to death. Looking at these words and just like a mantra, just going over them over and over and over and over, and just begging the angels to help me. And I had experienced a physical, like tangible, profound healing. And I woke up the next day completely normal. Like it was a very intense first-hand experience. And from that point on, I had that solidified awareness in my mind, and I was 9 years old, that there was more than what we were experiencing on the earth plane. And there was more than what our senses, you know, were experiencing, that there was more. So from that point on, once I got into high school, I was really, really drawn to transcendentalism. I was really drawn to Huxley. There was so much, even in terms of religion, I enjoyed learning about. We touched a lot on like Judaism, and I went to a really progressive high school, like Catholic high school. So there was so much. We had an electing, and so all of these things were very impactful. And I had such incredible teachers too that allowed me to question so much in class. And there was like this allowance for this discourse to happen and in a really safe kind of way, and being able to express. And so all of those things were really impactful on my psyche. And when I was 13, we actually, at that point, I was actually living with my aunt, who I live with now in a weird way, 20 years later. I'm now taking care of her, but my father's sister wound up adopting me when I was 13, and I lived with her until I moved out. I left as soon as I graduated high school. I moved out, and I remember there would always be family around from Mexico that would come to stay and just stay at our house while they would kind of explore New York and be in the States. But I didn't really pay much attention at that time because I cared more about, you know, hanging out with friends. And when you're that age, especially with people that, you know, these are your family members, but I didn't grow up with these people. I don't know who they are. So we had this couple come to stay with us, and they were super hippy-dippy. And I remember being so struck by the fact that they traveled with their bird in a wooden cage. And I was like, wow, these people are here, and they really brought this bird on the plane. And I just was thinking to myself, like, huh, these people are really interesting. So after about a few days of them observing me, they finally decided to have a chat. And Daniel, this cousin, knocked on my bedroom door and asked if he could speak with me. And I remember we were sitting on my floor in my bedroom, and he's telling a story of a personal encounter that he had while traveling in a Mexican desert. He had a astral projection experience where he went somewhere that was not of this plane and connected with my father, who had passed in 1988. So what happened was this experience that he had happened the same day that my father died. So mind you, he's now telling me the story in 1995, 96. So he waited until I was old enough to kind of be able to comprehend what he was telling me. And he had gone to hang out with some Mexican Indians, and he asked them about this experience because he had come to find out when he contacted his mother on a payphone to say, like, hey, I made it out to the desert. I'm going to be, you know, off the grid for a few days. And she was like, you know, I'm sorry, I have bad news for you, but your uncle Armando died. And so he was really struck by this. And when he connected with the Mexican Indians and these shamans to help him kind of explain, like, well, what was this experience that I had, and why was he there? They gave him some insight, but then also followed up with that my father was a healer as well, but his gifts were not actualized in this current lifetime. And hearing this was pretty overwhelming for me. I got really defensive. You know, at that age, I was kind of like, you know, who are you to tell me this? Like, who are you to talk to me about my father? And, you know, if he was such a healer, why couldn't he heal himself? You know, this was my reaction to this. And so he's like, well, I don't have those answers for you, but my point in telling you this is that you, as far as what these people have told me, that these gifts will be passed to you, and that you are going to be doing Reiki, you're going to be teaching Reiki, and you're going to be doing a lot of things involving the metaphysical arts. And I'm like, what? I don't even know what these words are. And he was like, you need to read all of, you know, Carlos Quintanilla. And I don't know if you're familiar with Carlos Quintanilla's work, but that would be like trying to read a completely different language at age 13, 14 years old. So
it's a lot.
And I can imagine, like, okay, so just to pause for a second, like, the more I talk to people on this podcast, the more I find how interesting our stories coincide. And it's like that interesting thing. I was talking about this with a friend of mine who's in recovery, and you think you're very special, and then you get into a room with a bunch of addicts and you just realize that it's all the same story in a weird way. And I feel like the same is true a lot with healers, because so many things within your story that parallel my own story. And my own mother was also, you know, I don't know how deep, you know, you get into astrology, but my mom had Chiron conjunct her sun. And so Chiron is known in Greek mythology as the wounded healer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for anyone listening who's not familiar, he was a great healer who could not heal himself. And I think that that's the ironic part of most healers, is they become healers because they are in dire need of healing themselves. And through the art of healing others, they are able to slowly start to begin to heal themselves, because it's like love. When we give love out, you receive it. It is universal love. So I think
you said
it
beautiful. You said it exactly the way that I explain this work to others, especially when working with new students who almost feel like they're not worthy of performing the practice. And I'm like, but that's where the work begins, is within your practice. Your healing comes from the evolvement of your work and your practice, and it will eventually begin to mirror, a lot of your own healing. And so you're 100% right. This notion that you have to be 100% healed to start working and facilitating healing for other people is completely false.
You heal someone unless you experience the darkness of pain and trauma? I feel like it's like a doctor's not going to give you the best diagnosis unless he's worked with other patients who have it, or he's dealt with that type of pain themselves. So the best 100%. Teachers are the ones that have actually gone through those experiences, and they can guide by being a living example of those things.
100%. And I can't speak for other people, but I also, like you, recognize this commonality amongst healers and healer friends that I have and colleagues. But for my personal experience, the profound loss that I experienced at a young age, along with abuse and trauma by my family members, and other life experiences, has informed me deeply as a healer, because I don't think, the empathy and compassion within would be what it was or what it is now had I not had these experiences. And being trauma-informed is also such a massive part of this work too. And so this older paradigm of healing, while I respect it, there's no way to incorporate what we know now in terms of the brain and the body and mind-body connection. There's no way that cannot be part of your process. And so I really strive to work within this paradigm of really being a bridge for modern, not just technology, the modern aspects of psychology, of tying in Western medicine, because I see that there's a lot of anti-Western everything, and that kind of freaks me out in the healer world. And I make sure that people understand that I've actively tried to be a bridge for both. And
I think it's
we
so
cannot
important. I think that's the best.
It's so important.
It's like, okay, so with astrology, like if people ask me a lot, like how do you become an astrologer, what it takes to be a good astrologer, what it takes to be a good healer, and the one thing that I consistently say, I say a few things, but one of the main things is that, like, this is just one outlet for you, and you should explore a lot more outlets. And in order to become a good astrologer, I feel like you need to have a really good fundamental understanding of psychology, different types of psychology, different types of trauma-informed psychology, things like inner family systems is a good thing to know.
Yes.
Things like cognitive behavioral therapy techniques, dialectal behavior techniques, in addition to other things that are more somatic, like breath work or
polyvagal theory.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, like, when you are working with a melting pot or a buffet table of different tools and techniques, not everything is going to work for everyone all the time. So it's good to have a mix, because if something doesn't work, you need three things in your back pocket to pull from.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I think is really beautiful about the system of Reiki specifically, is because it's really synergistic with many, many modalities. And so I found it was like really important for me in my practice that I have a community and a network that I would pull from. So if I've sensed that a client also needed, you know, acupuncture, herbs, if someone needed, you know, a psychotherapy, you know, reference, or if they needed some other form of additional like body work, whether it's Eastern or a Western approach, it's really important to have at least like a basic knowledge of other forms of practices that can help bring healing to the body, the mind, you know, the nervous system. And so I think that it's just really important to have like a vast awareness. You don't need to be an expert, obviously, in every single field, but just having a loose understanding is important, because we need to understand that we're not always a single person working with someone, and we're not going to be the person that shines the light on everything that a person needs to see. It tends to be multiple streams.
Do you feel okay? So I grew up also, a lot of things, like I said, paralleled in my own story. Like, I grew up Jewish, and it was weird because there were parts of Judaism I very strongly connected with, but more so I always connected with this idea of spirit being even bigger than what I was taught, like really more like things that were built within nature, within spirit of like, I'm trying to think of a way to describe it, but just under having a more, well, growing up, I identified as being Wiccan. and then that grew as I developed and I learned. And it's interesting. My brother is pagan, and my niece practices hoodoo. And so like, there's all these different things happening within my family. My mom believed very strongly that she had a sixth sense, although that was not very much explored. My grandmother thought she was a descendant of Ruth from the Bible and would write.
Wow. And that's like, cool.
Yeah. So like there's a strong amount of spirit within me. My third and fourth houses are ruled by Scorpio and Sagittarius respectively. So like, I have always felt that. And what's very interesting, and I've talked about this before, is I would go to the synagogue. My grandfather was the rabbi there, and I just fell in love with the stained glass and, like you said, the smells of things, although they were different smells for us. But I just, they are, it like moved me, and the mostly the chanting, I think, moved me.
Yes.
And so I realized very young, the big thing that I noticed, like 10, 11 years old, is the healing power of vibration.
Oh, I know, the vibration. Oh, and singing. And that was such a huge, I mean, I can still like sing and remember like the hymns, and especially like my Divine Mother connection. Yes, and all of that. And you know what's really interesting, in that you mentioning being, you know, growing up in you know, Judaism, and I don't know if you know this about me, but I had such a strong pull to everything very like Jewish, Eastern European. So I went through this phase where I was obsessed with Russian Jews, and I almost considered like really looking into learning Russian. And I was also like at an early age like attracted to Eastern European men. And my first like serious relationship in high school was with a guy named Adam, and him and his sister were born in Poland. They spoke Polish in the house, and my high school was like Ukrainian, very heavily like Ukrainian. And so I realized, and it was so kind of this roundabout thing, like it wasn't something I really talked about, but I was always really attracted to just like Russian Jews, like Eastern European culture, Judaism. And so one time I was talking with a woman who actually became like a really great friend of mine. She's actually one of my best friends. And she said to me, "Do you have a scar on your right knee?" And I was like, "Yes." And it's actually, it's pretty gnarly. It was one of those things where, like, you know, the kind of parenting style of, like, you know, if you're not bleeding from the eye, like, you're fine. We don't need to go to the hospital. Just put a Band-Aid on it. Well, I should have gotten stitches, but it was a big injury from when I was little. Actually, weirdly enough, on Easter Sunday, in all white, blood everywhere, I fell off my scooter and, like, skidded on the concrete. So it never really healed properly, and it's just a really gross scar. And so I tend to be self-conscious about it. And I was like, "Yeah, I have this scar in my knee." And she's like, "You know what that's representative of, right?" And I was like, "No." And she was like, "That is a representation of your past life in the Holocaust."
Wow.
And my whole body just, I mean, I started sweating. I had such a, like, visceral reaction, and, like, when she said that to me, and I was like, "What?" And she's like, "Oh, that's a big part of your soul history, your soul story." And I remember, like, even as a kid, being obsessed with Lois Lowry's, remember that book, Number of the Stars? Yes.
It's crazy. I love hate that I'm hearing this, because it's sad, but I don't talk about this very often except with people I trust. Hello, guys, you're learning secrets of mine today. Ever since I was 7 years old, maybe even younger, I know for a fact, and I've had an Akashic Records reading as well to confirm this, but I definitely have a past where I was in the Holocaust as well. And when I was young, I would have dreams about the trains. I had an unexplained fear of European police sirens to this day. It's like almost a somatic thing. My body just tenses up when I hear it.
Yeah.
Crazy. And so, like, I remember being very young, and my brother Jeffrey took me to a bookstore in, like, the shopping center that I grew up in, and he was like, "I'll get you whatever you want," and I just walked immediately right directly to the Diary of Anne Frank, and I remember reading it, and it felt familiar, not to say that I was Anne Frank, but like, it felt very,
yes,
like,
I had that
there.
Same thing. Mm-hmm.
And then I went and I looked at her parents' astrology charts, because I just so much understood the dynamics of how she explained what was going on. And I looked at her family, like, their astrology charts, and they were all wired like my family. Like, her dad was a Taurus. Like, my dad was a Taurus. Her mom was a Capricorn. My stepmom was a Capricorn. Her sister was an Aquarius. My older sister's an Aquarius. And
that,
so it was just this
wild,
weird, intuitive understanding of this young girl's energy. And so, like, you know, it's possible perhaps in a past life I was a friend of hers. It's possible,
right,
my story could have just been so similar to hers. That
exactly. And I had that same kind of, like, it was familiar. It was, and if, you know, there's been other points in time in life where I've had that sense of, like, this isn't new to me. I have this understanding on a level that I may not be able to articulate, or I may not be able to explain, you know, rationally, or there's something else here. And I had a very similar experience when I studied Chinese medicine. When I was in school, I went to school in 2010, I entered into the Swedish Institute of Massage because I wanted to understand the body from a physical place, and because I felt like that was going to better inform me as an energy worker. Not that because I really wanted to be a massage therapist, but I also just wanted this experience, and I also wanted to learn shiatsu. And it was so weird because I actually had that first glimpse of awareness the first time I saw Rachel from, do you remember, she played Brenda on 6 Feet Under?
Oh my goodness, yes, I love her. I very much identify with aspects of that character.
Me too. My younger self does too. And there was an episode where Brenda is doing shiatsu. And I watched it and I was like, I know that. Yeah. Like I had this, I was like, I know what that is. And that didn't happen for me. Like it, obviously that was years then later, but when I got into massage school, I knew that I wanted to specialize in Eastern modalities and specialize in understand the meridian system, the relationship between the elements from a five element Chinese model. And so that when I was in that process of learning, it was like easy. It was like as if I already knew it. It was like, oh, I'm just remembering something that I already knew from a different time.
That's so cool. I love it.
Yeah.
So what if I may ask, how did you begin to understand that you intuitively could understand people's bodies and what was happening in them? Because for those who are listening, I had a session with Shannon and you were able to identify all these very specific things that were happening in my body and where I was experiencing pain. And you and I have never even met in person. We've never talked about my medical health. I mean, Shannon is a real deal. I'm curious how that developed.
Well, thank you so much. And it was so, yeah, it was so funny. I tend to have these like incredible connections with people that I meet on Instagram. I don't know what it is. And I know it's social media can be complete trash, but I've been really lucky in the way that I have been able to come across people and have such beautiful experiences. And I felt that with you, and I've, you know, even before we even, what's interesting is that we didn't even really have much of any dialogue at all, even before we were like, hey, let's do this trade, like very little, except for just having, like, I've just had this appreciation, for your content and your work and obviously like similarities in terms of music taste and Well, a big part of, I guess, in terms of being a medical intuitive, and I say that lightly, like, I don't want to say like, I wouldn't market myself as like, I'm 100% a medical intuitive, and that is what
I do. But you have that as an ability.
And I really do believe that the guides pull from our experiences in a way that if they understand you have this specific background and maybe you don't fully work with that background anymore, it still can be used as a tool for your healing work. And so when I went to massage school, and this is the founding school of massage in the country, this is the Swedish Institute in New York, and it's a health science associate's degree. And so that first like semester, going into like second semester, is really deep and focused, very similar to like, you know, John Hopkins Medical. It's very like anatomy, physiology, heavy intensive, myology, neuro, pathology. I mean, we go so deep. It's not just learning how to give a massage. It's really understanding the internal workings of the body. And even though I found it really difficult to juggle that workload while also working as an esthetician, because I was a holistic esthetician for 15 years at the Great Jones Spa. And that was also the place where my healing journey started. I kind of like had my own Reiki practice at Great Jones. And so I found that what was happening is, as I was going through the process of school, when I would have Reiki sessions at night at work, some of that information started infiltrating my sessions. So it wasn't just like, oh, I'm sensing this area of the body, there's a sense of fullness, or there's a lack of energy. In Chinese medicine, we say that that's like an area, like we either want to tonify an area or we want to, you know, disperse an area of energy. So it wasn't just like, oh, I'm picking up this one area is feeling energetically off. It started to become, oh, I'm sensing that there's an imbalance in the liver, or I'm sensing that do you have a history with gallstones? Or I'm picking up that you have endometriosis, or you have an issue now. This is a chronic issue you're dealing with, but it's your L5 issue, you know, in your lumbar spine. It started to become like that. And one of the, I guess at that point, I was just seeing it as like, oh, I'm just lucky, guessing. I don't know. I was having a hard time understanding that this was something that was opening up for me. And out of all the things that have opened up for me in terms of being a psychic medium or, you know, an Akashic Records reader, because that's actually what I do full time, out of everything, I had the hardest time with being like, accepting that. I don't know why, and I don't know what that's from. Until this day, I still don't know. But but I remember kind of that solidifying in my mind that this was really a thing when a facial client who was not a client of mine in energy work, but knew that I did this too, she came in and she was like, my skin has been so weird. I don't know what's going on. And I look at her face and I remember touching her and going, you have parasites. And she was like, what? And I'm like, yeah, you should go to the doctor, go get some blood work, go to, you know, figure it out and see what happens, get a test done and tell me. So anyway, so she emails me back not too long after the facial. And she was like, yeah, you were right. I had parasites. She's like, I would never in my life have thought to go to a parasite specialist, you know, to get that done. And so, and then that's when I was like, okay, this is part of what I do now.
Wow. That's amazing. So you do Akashic Records full time. That's mm-hmm. like your main gig. You're also yeah. a psychic medium. I'm yes. curious, like, okay, so where did that road begin? This is all so interesting.
You know, the mediumship aspect, now looking back, has always been there. And what was happening was, as a child, my experiences with picking up on spirit were horrifying and scary. And so because of that, I remember being in my bedroom that was all pink, and I was laying in bed and I had my Bible, and I remember saying out loud, because I kept hearing and feeling and sensing that things were around, things were looking at me. And at that time I was living in a really abusive home situation, where things like I was not allowed to go to the bathroom at night, like the door handles were taken off, like weird, like power control things, like mental abuse. And because this person and the whole household was in such low energetics, I'm talking like addiction, suicidal tendency, and then there was I was living in such a dark home situation, plus dealing with my own depression and whatever else I was emitting energetically. So I really, to this day, believe that that house had poltergeist activity and was also attracting a lot of lower vibrational energy. And
I've lived in a house with somebody like that. I think that they were, I mean, I know for a fact they were practicing black magic. Mm-hmm. And like everybody would come over to this house, and they'd come over because he had these beautiful kitties that were so sweet. But yeah. Every time you go into the house, everybody would just like leave with a bad vibration. It literally made me feel like I was going insane
being yes. in it. You literally say it exactly how that it's so true, that when you are in a energetic space that is like that, it does attack you in a way where you start to feel like you're insane. And the fear I remember was so intense in my body, that I really do believe that the fear that I experienced at that age living in that home environment really contributed to a lot of nervous system disruption and development in my body, which I think had a big contributing factor to PCOS and issues around managing flight or flight responses, and dealing with, you know, different other forms of autonomic responses. And so at that age, I remember just being like in, like, again, like in my room with the Bible, and I said out loud, I said, no one can reveal or show themselves to me. And I even said out loud, like, to my parents, I'm like, if I'm open to you visiting me in my dreams, I'm open to you coming in and being with me, but you cannot show yourself to me. I made it like such, I remember this being such a declaration. And I didn't realize what I was doing. I was basically saying, like, this is my parameters. And wouldn't you believe that till this day, when I interact with spirit who has crossed over, I do not see them standing next to me or being in the room. I only sense them in my field, and then they project images, thoughts, words, and they tell their story in my mind.
Yeah.
But I have a tangible.
Same for me as well.
Yeah.
I get like very like mind's eye. Like I remember the first time it really, really was shocking to me when I became aware of it. I saw a red car getting into a collision.
Mm-hmm.
And I was with a friend who had lost their dad, and I knew that their dad had died in a car accident. We never discussed the actual car, and I was able to like describe the car. And I was like, this isn't coming from nowhere. Although I don't hear, it's weird, like I don't hear voices, but like certain sentences just come into my brain. Does that make sense?
100%, because that's literally how I experience my mediumship as well.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly that.
I've never really spoken to anybody who experienced mediumship other than my friend Peter. Shout out Tarot Reader Peter, if he's listening on Instagram, go follow him, he's real deal. But like, I'm still in that phase where I'm still learning so much about my own abilities. So this is fascinating for me. Okay, sorry, I did not.
I know, I love that. I love that. Because, you know, I also don't have these discussions much either, as far as like, let's discuss your process or how do you experience this. So it's actually really exciting and fun for me to talk about it and to know that, you know, that you experience mediumship in the same way that I do. And do you have the physical, can I ask you about when it comes to sensing spirit in your field? I'm curious if you have this too. Because of years of energy work, because I've been doing practicing and professionally doing energy work for, I just had my 13th year anniversary in June.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so I noticed that with energy development and energy perception and sensitivity over time, that gets, you know, evolved and it gets stronger. And so I find that when I have awareness that a spirit is coming through, I feel them in my field, and I also sense a cold, like, breeze sensation. And because I naturally run hot internally, like I always kind of run on the hot side. So when spirit comes through, it gets very cold for me. And depending on what side of the body will indicate if it's father's side or mother's side for a client.
I don't have that, although it could develop. I've heard things like that do change. For me, I get what, like, I guess you would call them, like, it's almost like ASMR tingles. Like, I just,
yeah,
I get like a chill, and it's very, it doesn't stay with me, but it's just like as if somebody were to startle you and come up from behind and tap you on the shoulder. You just, that weird chill, that's the best way I can describe it.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting, and I'd love to, you know, have this conversation again one time in the future, how the shift in leadership and how that changes and develops. And for me, it's always, and not to say that it's not, it's always a different experience, and very like awe-inspiring when I'm able to connect with another person's loved one, because I have such a closeness to it, because I understand that because of losing my parents. So like, it is a privilege to be able to do mediumship in any form. But I have to say, what has become exciting in the last few years, and this isn't something that happens all the time, and maybe that's why they're also more memorable, but I have had experiences in the Akasha. And I know that other people who do Akashic records have said this, or I know that it's taught that spirit oftentimes avoid the Akashic realm, or that's not a place where they tend to show up. But I actually have had many experiences in an Akashic reading where I had mediumship occur, and not only mediumship as far as like relatives or partners or sisters or brothers come through, but I've had experiences where people's animals have come forward, and then to even like blow, I mean, this blew my head off, so I'm assuming it's going to blow your head off. It's one thing to read spirit, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I've had the experience now 3 times in 5 years where I've had the records open for a person and their living animal has projected their consciousness into the reading. And I've had to say to people, okay, so your cat is showing me that it prefers this food over this one. And I've had a dog say, hey, I know that you tend to want to take me to this place or this park, depending on your work schedule, but I really prefer this place instead, and describe the location and aspects of the park. Like, to me, that has been some of the most like profound experiences of my entire career.
That's amazing. I don't have pets right now, but I always used to feel that I had a very kindred relationship. Like, we had many past lives with my old dog. Mm-hmm. Like, it felt like my dog was just, I mean, this was the sweetest old dog. Like, by the time I was born, this dog was blind. Like, it didn't bark. It was just so sweet. It was like, I had a very neglected childhood, and so I was left alone at like 4, and I would just sleep with this dog. Oh, the dog couldn't save me for anything. If anything, I had a dog, but I still felt very safe. Like, another first thing, I always wonder if I had past Brandy.
Oh my God. And I believe that we have had deep, profound relationships with certain animals, where you're like, you know, you always hear stories about people saying like, oh, I've had dogs all my life, but this one dog, you know, like the way that you're saying, I think it's 100% true.
Yeah.
Because I really feel like animals are our protectors, our guardians, our helpers, and helping us to evolve on a soul level. I really, truly believe that. And animals have such an impact on trauma. And I've had really profound like love experiences with certain cats throughout my whole life, and I love dogs too. I love animals, but I have this, I don't know, there's something about cats. And I had a cat for 10 years who I swear just, he would look at me as if like he just know what was going on inside of me. And he was beautiful, but he also, if he could be a human, he would have been Stewie from the family.
Oh my goodness. Well, Shannon, I would love to have you back at some point. I feel like there's a million things that we could potentially talk about. Is there anything that you're promoting right now or that you would like to share with us, or you have any special offerings at the moment?
Yeah, thank you so much. First, you know, just thank you for having me on. It's been so much fun, and yes, I would be totally open, and I would love to continue, because I feel like we haven't even, yeah. I feel like we still need to even discuss, we need to really discuss magic.
No, also. We need to find a time to make this happen, but I know you're on a schedule today.
So. Exactly. Yeah, we have to have another conversation about so many, I feel like, yeah, we could talk about so many things. As far as what's going on right now, I am teaching my first class on 13th octave Lahu Chi, which is a completely different healing system. It has nothing to do with Reiki, but it's beautiful. Also has very specific connectivity with the angelic realm as far as like how you invoke them for that particular healing system. And it also works with the violet flame and Ascended Masters. It's a really incredible, powerful energy work system. But I also offer that remotely and in person. And I also offer group breathwork sessions that are affordable. I'm doing a interdimensional communication through the Tree of Life anchored by the Akashic Records. That's next week. So I have everything, my workshops and offerings are on my link, my brand new, as of today, link tree that my assistant was incredible at putting together because I'm really bad at technology. So she did that for me today. So if you go to my link tree at Radical Reiki on Instagram, you'll be able to see my workshops and remote sessions.
Guys, please go get a session with her, take a class with her. It's amazing. Like literally, you were so kind to do that session for me, and it was literally all I need. I just felt like I had life back in me for a couple of days, because it's so nice to perform Reiki on yourself, but sometimes when you're just like pulling energy, and we're all in lockdown right now, so we're not physically able to touch or be around anyone, it can feel very trapped. So just to even to get energy from another human, even over Zoom, was so needed.
Well, and we do, you know, we are working for other people. We have to, part of the lessening for us as, you know, healers of any kind, you know, energy workers, whatever the case may be, when we facilitate for other people, we know that that's our path. We know that's our, you know, if you want to say your dharma, or if you know that's your path, is I'm here to help people. I think a big part of that work is learning that we also need to learn how to receive. And that's been an evolving process for me in my 30s, because I'm gonna be 40 in 2 years. And I feel like I just learned how to receive like 2 years ago. I'm not even kidding. It's been a work in progress. So yeah, I think we need to find that balance. And so it's just so nice to be able to experience what that is, right? To just be open and allow someone in to work on you. And I think it's important that we remember that we need that too.
Absolutely. All right, we're gonna have you back soon. I hope you have a great afternoon, and thank you so much for sharing with us today. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been so much fun, and it's so funny. I've said some things on here that I literally have never said to people. So
this brand is really info. Journalist.
Yes, yes. So thank you so much, and have a great rest of your day.
You too. Bye bye. Have a confession. I'm kind of obsessed with vintage lingerie, and I have been pretty much my whole life, which sounds kind of weird to say, but I also grew up obsessed with Courtney Love, and her style was so informative to my own personal style since I was a child. I love slips, I love teddies, I love taking the pinup girl style and making it my own. And when I'm looking for good vintage lingerie, Bride of the Fox has my back. They are a store located in Roanoke, Virginia, but they have an online presence, so you can shop online too. And you can find them on Instagram at Bride of the Fox. They have great items all the way from 1915 to the 1990s. Right now I'm kind of obsessed with this teddy that they have. It's like kind of beige and beautiful and silk, but what I really love is that it has a 40-inch bust, and it's so hard to find lingerie that's like good for someone who's kind of top heavy like me. So if you're also into vintage lingerie, you should go right now, add Bride of the Fox on Instagram, and you can check out their Etsy store. Some of their stuff is also on Instagram. And if you do live in Virginia, go to their in-person store. They even have private appointments.
So this week I thought I would talk a little bit about the Draconic chart. And if you guys are curious about how to pull up your Draconic chart, it's spelled Draconic. There's a few different places that you can pull up your Draconic chart. I prefer astro.com. but you can also go to AstroSeek. I think a few other websites do it. But a draconic chart is a map of your soul. So your astrology chart, your natal astrology chart, is a map of your self-imposed limitations that you will be challenged with in this life, this your karma, and different personality traits that you may have. And a draconic chart is more of a map of the soul. And so it can show you who you really are underneath all of that. So when you're looking at a draconic chart, they're very, very, very personal. And it's not necessarily something that people recognize about you. But I think you'll find if you look at your own draconic chart, you'll start to recognize those things within yourself. And so some things to look for in a draconic chart are, first of all, the ascendant, because that's truly what you want to project out into the world. It's the way you wish that you could express yourself. The nodes are also very important because that shows what you want to accomplish or what you need to accomplish. And the IC is also, again, really important because that shows you the family that you wish that you had. So your normal IC will show you the family that you do have, whereas your draconic IC will show you the one that you wish that you had. And then with the descendant, of course, that would be the partner that you wish that you had. And the MC would be the reputation that you wish that you had. You know, some people think that the draconic chart is also a map of your past life. I've definitely used it that way. I very strongly identify with my draconic chart. I actually find that I attract the rising sign of my draconic chart pretty often. My draconic sun and moon is in Scorpio. It's also at 19 degrees Scorpio, my sun, which is interesting because the degree 19 degrees Scorpio runs rampant throughout my family and other energy workers that I've met. My dear friend Maddie, who has been on this podcast before, has her moon at 19 degrees Scorpio. And my rising sign in my draconic chart is at 0 degrees Gemini. And I attract a large amount of Gemini rising people in my life. And so that's very interesting to me. I also attract a lot of Scorpio moon people. So I think it's interesting that that's what I attract, and I just assume it's very karmic that way. So I want you guys all to check out your draconic chart. Tell me what you find, and let me know if it registers with you.
And now, Burn Black presents the Burn Black Book Club. Say that 5 times fast.
So this week, I'm here reviewing the book High Magic, A Guide to the Spiritual Practices That Saved My Life on Death Row by Damien Eccles. If you're not familiar with Damien Eccles, you really need to visit the three documentaries on HBO from the 90s, Paradise Lost. Damien Eccles was part of the West Memphis 3. He was infamously incarcerated for over 20 years for a crime he did not commit. There was a lot of evidence in his defense, and it took him quite a bit of time and a lot of community effort to see that he was exonerated, which he eventually was. Damien Eccles started off practicing Wicca when he was young, I read, and he would write love spells in his journals, but by the time that he was incarcerated, he really decided to dive deep into high magic, ceremonial magic, in an effort to keep away really bad vibrations in the prison system, keep his morale high, and eventually get exonerated. And this book is amazing. And I think that in this time of lockdown, we can all learn a thing or two from these practices. And
The book opens with a foreword from Eddie Vedder of Pearl Jam, who was a huge champion of his release. I remember this from being a kid and watching those documentaries. He spoke all the time about the West Memphis 3. And I also remember my birthday soulmate, Henry Rollins, talking quite a bit about it too. I purchased the record that he put out to raise money for Damian Echols and the other two men. Anyway, this book talks about everything from the beginnings of how much breath is super important in any sort of magic practice. It talks about basic principles like the Tree of Life and things to understand like as above, so below, just basic things that you learn when you start beginning to learn about ceremonial magic. More than anything, this book is just really a guide on how to get in touch with yourself with very little tools. I think so often we think about magic and we need potions and we need herbs and things like that. And those things are nice, but Damian shows how you can practice magic with nothing but yourself. And I think that that's super important. So that's something I really took away from this book. I can't help but be completely moved even talking about it. Just knowing what he had to go through and experience and how much these practices really did truly keep him alive, spiritually and physically, you know? And I think that we all have a thing or two to learn about that. I find myself even stumbling on my words talking about it. Magic created freedom for Damian. And I think magic could create freedom for you guys too. So I highly recommend this book. It's a great introductory course on ceremonial magic, but it's an even bigger lesson, I think, in survival and independence and, above all that, faith.
And now for the self-care tip of the week.
Hi, BBs. It's Lauren Francis, and I am here with your self-care tip of the week. It's cancer season, and you know what that means. Water, connecting with water, being affected by water. My self-care tip of the week to you is to spend some time with water. Whatever that means for you, it could mean taking a long bubble bath after an exhausting day. It could mean finding a body of water nearby where you live and spending some time out in nature. Or if you can't do something like that, it could be as simple as downloading a white noise app and listening to some water sounds. Take some time this week to spend with yourself and nature and be affected by the cancer season we are currently in and the water and how it affects you. Allow it to soothe you, allow it to calm you, meditate, breathe, relax, and just enjoy nature's gift of water.
Burn black.